The main illustration in my sermon this evening centers on a mirror. So I took some time this afternoon to learn how they're made and understand a little bit about the various types of mirrors that there are. And so the reflection in a mirror, and of course we already know this, is very, very accurate. We can see ourselves perfectly. They're in every home, every car, every restaurant, because they function so well. They give us the ability to see the things that we could not see, but because of their positions, they help us to see behind us and on the side of us, and they help us to see ourselves. But it's actually just a piece of glass with silver that has been sprayed or chemically applied to the back of the glass. And when you look in the mirror, what you're really seeing is that silver. But on the silver reflects our image, and we see the image. We don't see the silver on the glass. We only focus on the image. And, of course, if there's any blemishes in the glass, then we can see a little bit of a distortion there. But primarily, the only way we can see ourselves is through a mirror. You just can't do it without a mirror. And it's interesting, in Malawi, they don't have very many mirrors. I only see myself a few times during the trip because they don't have mirrors. But I carry a little one just to make sure the hair is where it ought to be. But not all mirrors are created equal. I went out this afternoon to look at because I couldn't remember exactly how it's worded, but if you ever look at your passenger side mirror, the one on the door, it will say, objects in mirror are closer than they appear. In other words, a mirror has been modified so that you can see more of what's behind you, but actually it's not clear because the surface has been changed. The glass has either been made convex, which means it's bulging outwards, or concave, which means it's bulging inward. And so when you look at a mirror like this, it distorts things. And some of us, older people, used to remember going to the funhouse. I don't know if they have those anymore, those funhouse mirrors. But they deliberately distort things. So here's an example of a mirror. Is this one concave or convex? Well, I don't guess that really matters. But you can see her hand is bigger. In this case, the things behind are smaller. And then, of course, you have the child who is looking. And again, if you're my age, you remember this. Some of you may not. But here's a little kid, and you can see he's looking at himself. And obviously, the image is distorted. And here's two mirrors where you can see that in this one, he's shorter, and in this one, he's taller. And you can see that it's distorted. And you say, well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, what about God? The creation is God's mirror. It's the only mirror we have. Just like we can't see ourselves, we can't see the majesty and the power of God. Now, we can read it in the scriptures, but again, I made this point a few weeks ago when we were talking about heaven. To read Genesis chapter 1 and say to yourself, God is so amazing because he made the sun, the moon, the stars, the birds, the fish. But then you get an opportunity to watch one of these Jacques Cousteau videos, or you get to look at the videos of what's in the sea and what's in the skies and what the birds are. And the more you see, the more amazing it is. And we do need the material creation to fill in the gaps of Genesis chapter 1. And so, say, for example, in Psalms 19, the heavens declare the glory of God and the earth declares his handiwork. Now, this verse is very clear. What may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. Well, how did he show it to them? They don't have a Bible. Well, since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, that they are without excuse. So imagine, if you will, that when we put the silver on the back of the glass and we look at ourselves, we see the mirror. We see our face reflecting from the mirror. When we look at the material creation, it's just like silver on the glass, and by looking at it, we can see God's eternal attributes. We can see his power in the sun. To think of how much energy the sun is producing, and to think of a God who could hang that there, and then billions and billions of stars that are doing exactly the same thing, and we get a little bit of a reflection of God's majesty and God's power. And we look into the depths of the sea, and you see down there, no one's ever gotten to go down there, but they've got these fancy submarines now. They can go down like 4,000 or 5,000 feet, and what's down there is incredible. Just amazing. I was absolutely amazed to see what's down there. Some of them are beautiful. Some are the ugliest thing you ever saw in your life, and some of them are really scary. But why did God do that? Why did God put things where we can't even see them? The further we go, the more microscopes we get and the more telescopes we get, and the deeper we go into anatomy and physiology, or the deeper we go, the more majestic, the more meticulous, the more intricate, and the more glory and majesty and power and wisdom that God's that this material creation can reflect back to us. But the curse made the creation like that funhouse mirror. There are some things in the material creation, and God makes this very clear in his word, but they're distorted. We've heard the question, why did God create suffering? Why, as we look at the child that is born deformed, or we see someone who's been decapitated by an accident, or we witness a hawk swooping down and just completely annihilating a bird, and we look at these things and we think to ourselves, what does this reflect about God? What does this tell us about God? Well, a lot of people are going to tell us God is not very loving. He's not very compassionate. He's not very good, is what some people conclude by looking at the material creation. But if we look back at that child in the previous mirror here, we might say, you know, you better put that child on a diet. That child, if all I see is what's there, I'd say to myself, that child's in big trouble. But if you look at the reality, that's not really the case. So God is very clear that the creation he gave us and the creation we now see are not the same. And it's very, very important for God's people. You can't answer the arguments, I'm looking at suffering and I don't like the reflection of God that I see from that. I'm looking at the misery and the starvation and the, what is it, millions of people who are dying of malaria. We were at one of the congregations of getting up, getting ready to go preach, and he got a phone call. We need to go visit because one of the brothers, his nephew died last night. And so we went over there, and of course you have everybody's sitting. So you go in and you sit down and you talk to people, and then you get up and you go inside where all the mothers and aunts are, and they're weeping and crying. And over on the side here is a little blanket with a little seven-year-old that you can just see the silhouette of. It just broke my heart. And they said the reason this child died is because they didn't have anything to bring the fever down. He had malaria. If they'd had ibuprofen, if they'd had aspirin, they probably could have saved him, but they didn't have it. And I thought to myself, it just made me sick. And then, well, why did God do that then? Why did God create a disease that would kill millions of people? I mentioned a few years ago, a good preacher friend of mine, William Titsulo, his wife feels a little bit bad in the morning. They take her to the hospital and she's dead by 3 o'clock because of malaria. Why does that happen? People ask some very serious questions and we need to have answers. The answer is, God didn't do that. You say, what do you mean God didn't do that? God did everything. Well, let's take a look at this because we need to understand. Here's what the Ecclesiastes writer reveals to us. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity and a grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. Now, this is the creation we see. And it's true. Everything you look at. The people of Malawi, we were speaking a few years ago about the drought and how they weren't getting enough rain. And that's a terrible thing. Well, they imported some grain from South America and they brought in these worms that are called soldier worms. And they're big. And they go through a field and they just wipe it out. And they don't have any pesticide for it. And you think to yourself, boy, these poor guys, they finally get over the drought. And now these worms have come in and eaten everything. And it might as well be a drought again. And so what is crooked? There's so many crooked things in the world today. So many. And we can all relate to them. We've all personally been touched by them. There have been times in all of our lives where we've had to say, like Job, why? Why are you doing this? And of course, Job made some bad mistakes. He was fine until his friends came along and twisted his thinking. But that's the problem, and that can happen to us as well. When somebody comes up to somebody who's just lost a child or has just lost their arm or has just been told that they have a terminal illness, and you say to them, well, it's God's will. And my first response to that is, how do you know that? How do you know it's God's will? You say, well, God, everything that happens on this earth is God's will. No, it's not. That's not true at all. If I choose to kill someone, is that God's will? No, it's free will. God has set up the creation, so there's free will. And so you say, well, man is evil. Well, by his own choice. Now, God could stop it all and send everyone to the place they deserve, but as Peter points out, he's long-suffering, not wishing for any to perish. I often think to myself when I'm thinking, I wish God would bring the world to an end. What if some Christian had said that the day before I was baptized, and I didn't get to be baptized because God brought it all to the end? And think about it like that. There's always a different perspective that you have to think about. But there are so many crooked things, and as he points out, the word vanity just means empty, useless, futile. Did God give us an empty, futile creation? Is that really what we would believe? Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? And in the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Consider what? What am I supposed to consider? Why me, Lord? Why did you do this to me? Is that what I'm supposed to consider? Absolutely not. What we have to understand is that the curse has twisted the creation. You say, well, how do you know that, Alan? That's a pretty big statement. So what kind of world did God create? If we go back and look at Genesis chapter 1. Remember, Adam and Eve are the only ones who saw what came from the hands of God in Genesis chapter 1. Where the conclude, well, I'll not get ahead of myself here. So in the beginning, was there a curse? Well, if you carefully read Genesis chapter 1, you see in verse 4, God made the light and God saw that it was good. Then the next day, God made the dry land and the seas, and God saw that all he had made was good. Then in the next verse, plants and trees with seeds, and God saw that they were good. Then in verse, then the next day, the fourth day, God made the sun, the moon, the stars, and he saw that they were good. In just verse 21, all the creatures in the water and in the air, and God saw that it was good. And then he made the beasts, the cattle, everything on the ground. God saw that it was good. And then God looked over everything that he had made, and it was very good. Now, I would beg to differ with that statement if we use today's world. If we're going to use the world of today, I can see that it's not very good. Can't you? I mean, is God just, is he skewed here? What's the difference? This doesn't make any sense to me. This world that came from God, he says the light was good. He says that the dry land was good and the seas were good, but gravity pulls people to their death. Is that good? The plants and the trees with the seeds, but what about the droughts? What about all these difficulties? Are they good? Is it good when you watch the creatures in the water? Jeannie and I were watching a show the other day, and here's this big whale with a baby on its back. And here comes these three killer whales. And they were moving back and forth and knocking that baby off and drowning that baby. And pretty soon that baby drowned and they killed the baby and ate it. And I'm just thinking to myself, is that good? Is that very good? Well, I can't defend it. And I don't have to, because that's not what God made. The word good means that which is good to the senses, agreeable, pleasant, desirable, beautiful, and fair. That's what heaven's going to be. I don't foresee any of these terrible things that we have to look at and be disgusted by. But I'm going to give you a little secret right here, and that is, it's sin. Sin is responsible. Our choices, we brought this on ourselves. God didn't do it this way. Everything that God made was very good. It was useful, fit, suitable. prosperous, abundant, happiness, joyfulness, advantage, pleasure. In other words, everything that God made would have perfectly reflected his love, his care, his concern, his character. But that's not what we have today. Okay, I think we just... But as I say, only Adam and Eve saw it. Because after they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, everything changed. Everything shifted from the world that was perfect, where no one could die, where the tree of life was there. If you ate of the tree of life, you could live forever. Where we had total dominion over everything. We couldn't be eaten. We had dominion. You know, we talk about being at the top of the food chain, and then you watch a shark come in and take somebody down, and you say to yourself, well, it's nice to be at the top of the food chain, but if you get in their domain, they can take you out. And a serpent can put you to death. There's two terrible ways of dying if you're bitten by a serpent. I found all this out when I went to Malawi. The cobra bite causes you to bleed to death. It comes out of your eyes. It comes out of your ears. It comes out of your nose. If you get bitten by a black mamba, it causes your heart and your lungs to stop their ability to function. You just can't breathe and your heart can't beat anymore. I think to myself, I wonder which one I'd rather have. Well, neither one. Well, why are they there? Why could they do that? How could we say that God, everything in the world is good when you see all those things? Well, again, we're not seeing things completely clearly. It was only after they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and were cast out of the garden that everything changed. So here's what God says in Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. Through one man, sin entered the world. Now, think about it like this. If my wife makes a cake, perfect cake, wonderful cake, and we are getting ready to eat it, but somebody sneaks into the house and they sprinkle poison all over the cake, and we don't know it. Now, that cake that... let me drop this out. Jeannie didn't make this cake. Let's see, who should I pick? No, the cake was made. It's a good cake. But the people who eat the cake are all put to death. They all die. Well, why'd they die? Because of the poison. Because of the cake, not because of the person who made the cake. There was no malice in that cake. There was only love and a desire to make something good. But somebody intervened. The devil is the one who brought the poison into the world. And actually, the devil only gave man the opportunity. Man's the one who put it into the world. So, through one man, sin entered the world. Death entered through sin. Now, Romans 5:12 is talking about spiritual death. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. But this is physical death also. So, physical death, spiritual death, all came into the world at the same moment. At the same moment that they ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, their eternal souls died. Because sin, the wages of sin is death. So the moment they ate of that tree, the moment that they violated God's law, they died. Like Paul said in Romans chapter 7, sin came alive and I died. When Adam and Eve ate of that fruit, sin came alive and they died. But there was more to it than that. Because God had told them, in the day you eat it, you will surely die. Referring to spiritual death. But then he told Adam, and I think Adam probably already knew there would be a physical death and a spiritual death. Because Adam had the same knowledge that God did. He was created in the image and likeness of God. So in Genesis 3:19, dust you are, and to dust you will return. Now, I want you to think for a minute about what God had to twist and turn and change for someone who was designed to be created to live forever on the earth. And the earth was designed as a place we could live forever, where we would never die and where we would never be hurt and we would never have any problems. So what did God have to do to change that? Something had to happen. Now, some people say, well, God already knew they were going to sin, so he already created it flawed. And then when Adam and Eve sinned, it was okay. I don't think so. I think God, when God said it was very good, when God says this is good, this is good, this is good, I take him at his word. He made the world perfect. The earth was like heaven. In Revelation, we read of a place where there's no tears and no death and no sickness and no suffering and no hunger and no sorrow. That's how it was. And that's how it will be again. but not now. And so when we look at the earth, we do see a mirror. We see his power, we see his divinity, we see his wisdom. But you have to look at the gospel to really reflect the love and the mercy and the compassion and the care and concern, because you can't see it in the material creation because we wrecked it. We are the ones who created the problem. Because when the curse came, it went from very good to curse. I will greatly multiply your sorrow. Well, what does that mean? I don't think there was any pain in childbirth. Some people say, well, there might have been a little, because it says multiply. You can't if you multiply zero, you get zero. So there must have been a little. I don't know. My personal feeling is that childbirth wasn't intended to be a painful thing. You say, well, how could you get it out without pain? I don't know. How could you create a world where no one could ever die? God knows how to do things like that. But after the curse came, God said, I'm going to multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Obviously, that's different. That's not how it was, because God said, I will do this. He hadn't done it yet. Verse 17, to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for your sake. Now, what did God do? How did he change the earth? How did he change physics and chemistry? How did he say it's changed the plant life? So that now, I think, personally, that before the curse, all the plants would grow like the weeds do now. You can't hardly keep a weed from growing. You don't have to do anything. It just starts growing. And that's what he says. Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil, or as some translations have, in the sweat of your brow, you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you. Which again, I think there's a necessary inference here. There weren't any thorns. There weren't any thistles. There weren't any of these sharp, pointy things. There weren't any goat head stickers to get flat tires with, or to puncture your foot as you're running. I remember that in California. George was telling me they had them in New Mexico also. But I don't like those things. But they weren't there before. You say, why did God make that? He didn't. He cursed it into being. Didn't make it. And there's a huge difference here. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, this is exactly the opposite of Genesis chapter 1:31. God saw everything he had made, and it was very good. Now, vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Can you see that there's a little bit of a difference between this was good and this was good and this was good and this was good after each of the 6 days of creation? Then when everything is finished, there was only one thing God saw that he said, this isn't good. It's when God made man, but he hadn't made the woman yet. And then after he made the woman, brought her to Adam, and they were flesh, they were one flesh, then God says, everything I have made is very good. But the writer of Ecclesiastes says everything God has made is empty, void, worthless, useless, a bubble. The word vanity means a bubble. It's like the guy running around with a butterfly net, trying to catch the wind. It's just, there's nothing, it's just, that's the way the world is now, but it wasn't that way. He said, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. Now, he couldn't have written that before the curse. He wouldn't have written that before the curse, because that's not what God said. God said, everything I've made is very good. Then when we come into the next chapter and God says he brought all the animals to man and he brought everything to man and he named them, and then it says nothing was made that was suitable for man. So he made the woman and he put them in the garden. He said, tend it. And then he said, subdue the earth, take dominion. This is yours, and you can do whatever you want with it. You are made in my image and my likeness, and I have created the heavens and the earth so that you can create like I do. I have given you the ability and the power to do that with electricity, with chemistry, with physics. They were malleable. We see how malleable they are today, but can you imagine what it must have been like for Adam when he knew all of these things and he had full dominion? He was going to live forever and ever. Think of an Einstein. Think of an Edison who could live eternally. What kind of a world could people like that build? And that's what God had in mind. But after the curse, Solomon sees and he says, it's a burdensome task. There's no dominion anymore. We can't take dominion. We can't subdue the earth. Verse 14, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. And indeed, it is vanity and chasing for the wind. What is crooked? You can't make it straight. You know, a lot of people spend their entire lives on a course of wanting to fix. But God says it can't be fixed. I created it so you can't fix it. And can try to do everything they want to do. Where there's no solution. God twisted. The word crooked means that he twisted things. And the word lacking means he took something out. He took something out of all of the fruits and vegetables. And he put something in to all of the weeds. And he took something away so that mosquitoes used to just eat herbs like everybody else. And now they prey on us. And he put something in called malaria or dengue fever or West Nile. Well, why did he do that? Well, we'll see that in just a few moments. But as Solomon points out, you can't fix these things. You know, for a time, we can. We used to think that these antibiotics were just going to usher in a whole new world. And now what are we finding out? What is crooked can't be made straight. All of these antibiotics, the parasites and the bacteria that they are designed to put to death have managed to survive. One or two survive, they breed, and they make a race of the new bugs that can't be killed by these antibiotics. What do they call them? Super bugs or something. For the creation was subjected to futility. Not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself will also be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. Now, I don't know how you read this. I've studied this for many years. I have a commentary on the website. I don't think this initial creation is the world. I think the initial creation here is the church. The creation, the church, was subjected to futility. Why do you say that? Because look at verse 23. We who have the first fruits of the Spirit, we groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for what? The redemption of our body. The church has redeemed souls, but not redeemed bodies. We still go through the same agony and suffering, even though we no longer deserve it. So the creation was subjected to futility. Not willingly. If we could vote, we'd have said, no, Lord, let's do that a little differently. But because of him who subjected it in hope. I think God did that so that people could see, or would not be able to see, there are physical benefits to becoming a Christian. He didn't want that. So then in verse 21, because the creation itself will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. Well, that's the church. But then look at verse 22. We know that the whole creation groans. Well then, this is a different creation. That's why I say, I think after studying this for many years, that verses 20 and 21, talking about the church. Verse 22 is talking about the whole creation. The whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. And then here we are separated from the whole creation. And not only that, but we also, who have the first fruits of the Spirit. In other words, I have an eternal soul in a cursed body. What a groaning and travailing. We are groaning within ourselves. As Paul said, our outer man is decaying, and our inner man is being renewed day by day. We don't look at the things that are seen. We look at the things that are not seen. Because the things that are seen are temporary. So what does he say? He says the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs. Now does that sound like Genesis chapter 1? All that God has made was very good. And he said to the man, tend the garden, subdue the earth, take dominion. It's all yours. You are in my image and after my likeness. And anything you want to do, but not now. Everything's been, what's been made crooked, what's been lacking. That part of the mirror, the creation is a mirror. But it's like a funhouse mirror now. In other words, there are certain aspects of God's character that are now unable to be discerned through the material creation. They have to be determined through the scriptures. So I've always been fascinated with this passage. Let's go over there. I'm going to put it up here. But why don't you turn over to Genesis chapter 1 if you have your Bibles with you this morning or this evening. In Genesis chapter 1, God gives us the tiniest glimpse into the world before the curse. And it's an amazing glimpse. It gives us a concept that is fascinating. So we look at, again, chapter 1, verse 29. God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. Also, to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, that would be the bacteria, the viruses, the mosquitoes, the wasps, I have given every green herb for food, and it was so." You say, well, I can't imagine a lion being able to eat herbs. Well, can you imagine a cow or a sheep or a goat? I know that a cow, a sheep, and a goat can completely survive by eating herbs. Well, according to this, before the curse, the lions, the tigers, the bears, the serpents, the insects, the bacteria, it all fed on herbs. Most of the bacteria is benign. It eats the rotting vegetation, causes no problem to anyone. You can drink it, you can eat it, it won't be a problem at all. But some of them now do not feed on herbs. They feed on us. And the malaria parasite that is in the mosquito that bites me, because now he doesn't eat herbs anymore, like the grasshopper, now the mosquito feeds on me and on the animals. And when he feeds on me and on the animals, he injects into me a parasite that doesn't feed on herbs anymore. It feeds on the life of human beings. And it takes the lives of some human beings, which again was impossible before the curse. Because before the curse, there was no death. Death came through sin. Well, what does that infer? Well, what does it imply? What's the necessary inference here? The necessary inference is God didn't create this world like this. Every beast, even the serpent, from all indications, the serpent was not crawling on its belly, and it certainly didn't have poison, and it certainly didn't have the ability to kill people until after sin entered the world. So how can we point fingers at God for something that he didn't do? He didn't do it. God created a perfect world, a beautiful world, a good world, where everything ate herbs. No death. If we were watching documentaries, we'd be seeing all the fish in the sea eating plankton like that. Well, you say, how could they just eat? Well, I guess plankton. Is plankton herb, grass, or is it a, I don't know. Anyway, they all ate herbs. It wasn't a shark. It could go swimming in the ocean. Didn't have to worry about getting. Anyway. So, the blemishes create the wrong questions. Because we're looking at this mirror, we see Romans 1, we say, wait a minute, everything in the material creation reflects God's everlasting power and divinity. So, I ought to be able to look at that lion killing that innocent animal and ripping it apart and eating it, and I'd be able to see, I can see something about God in that. Well, I can too. I can see how sin damaged me by looking at the material creation. I really think the creation today is a parable. It's a parable of what has happened to us with sin. The fleshly lusts that are warring against the soul and are creating the same kinds of animals out of men, who are just like these animals who you can't trust them. They will kill, they will rape, they will destroy, just like the animal world. I think that the animal realm now just reflects what sin did to us. And I don't know all the ins and outs of it, because God hasn't explained it all, but he's explained enough of it to us to make the understanding that these questions are ridiculous. If God is good, why did he create suffering? And why is it? I mean, I've watched these beautiful butterflies, and they fly into the into the web, and they're just trying to get away. And here comes the spider walking up, and pretty soon, and then you watch the thing die, and you think to yourself, that's terrible. Makes me sick. Makes me sick to think about these people in Malawi having to get up in the night and go use the bathroom and step on a serpent, and the serpent bites them, and they either bleed to death or their heart stops beating, and it just breaks your heart. Or these people that are being bitten by these mosquitoes and dying. It's just terrible. My heart goes out to them. But do I point at God? No, I point at me. I point at the human race. We brought this on ourselves. God did not create these things. We brought it on ourselves. So all of these questions that people ask, why is man so cruel to his fellow man? God made us that way? No. God made man upright. We're the ones who sought out the schemes. We're the ones who perverted the divine nature into, again, the news every day is just filled with hideous stories of what these people have done to themselves. And for someone to say, well, God made me like this, it's not my fault. This is a good reflection of God. This man, what was it? I can't remember his first name. Dahmer, whatever joke. What, anyway, killing people and eating them. Oh, this is a good reflection of God. No, it's not. It's a good reflection of Satan and what Satan did with the world because of sin entering, as Jesus pointed out. The devil is the murderer. The devil is the liar from the beginning. He is the liar and the father of lies. And so all of these things have come as a result of the devil. So it was sin that entered the world through man. And the death that entered the world through sin. But who opened the door? Who opened the door and brought all this stuff in? Did God put it in here? No. No, just blot that from your mind. What we see with suffering is a part of the mirror that's like the funhouse mirror, and it's reflecting something back from God that doesn't exist. And it's foolish for us to be led down that path, just like Job was with his three friends. The next time we're in a terrible, we've fallen into a terrible hole of sorrow and grief. I did a lesson on this in the bulletin yesterday on light at the end of the tunnel. You know, the next step may throw us into a tunnel where we've got some terrible illness, or somebody we love has died, or some terrible thing has happened, or one of our children has fallen away, or some awful thing has occurred. I don't know when. I can't predict it. I just know it's right around the corner, because it's right around the corner for all of us. We just don't know what it's going to be. And we're going to be in this terrible hole just like Job. And the light at the end of the tunnel is the understanding God didn't want it like this. God didn't make it like this. And boy, I wish when I was baptized, my body could have been redeemed and my world could have been redeemed. But God said, no, I have other plans. You're still going to have to suffer like everyone else. You're still going to have to go through all the terrible consequences of sin, even though you've been redeemed. I'm still waiting for the redemption of my body, but it's not here yet. And I don't know when the next terrible thing's going to occur that's going to rip my heart out. And I'm going to be looking around trying to find answers. Why did this happen? When I start looking up at God and saying, this is all your fault. What a lie. What a terrible lie the devil has been able to twist. The scriptures are pretty clear. I mean, as you chart through it, as I've done this evening, I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind now that God didn't make it like this. He cursed it like this. He made it very differently. And the reason that things are the way they are is because of what we did. You say, well, I didn't do it. Yeah, well, why were you baptized for the remission of sins if you didn't do it? We all did it. We're all part of the problem. It's just like Jesus dying on the cross. Well, those terrible people back there, well, I didn't do any better. He had to die for me too. Even though many of us knew he died for us before we sinned. But did that stop us? We said, well, I'm not going to do that because Jesus already died for that. And I see how disgusting and terrible it is. I'm never going to do it. God says nobody's done it yet. None righteous, no, not one. None that doeth good. None that seeketh after God. So God's true character is given in James chapter 1, which is interesting because you remember just a few verses earlier he says the word of God is the mirror. The Word of God is the mirror. We look in the perfect law of liberty. Or even God put it that way in, 2 Corinthians chapter 3, that as in a mirror, we're looking into the Word of God, and we are being changed into the same image that is reflected from the Word of God, which is God's image. But here we have, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Now, you can't get it from the translation, but the Greek reads just a little bit differently here. The Greek words, every good gift and every perfect giving. You know, there's a gift, and then there's the giving. Now, the gift reflects the heart of the giver. But the giving itself, for example, Jesus is the gift, but God so loved the world that he gave. All of the giving, all of the gifts, whether you look at it from the giving part or you look at it from the gift part, it's from above. Now, the word good here, same basic concept as Genesis. The gifts God gave us in Genesis chapter 1 are good. So if you read Genesis 1:31, God saw all that he made, it was very good. That means every good gift and every perfect giving was reflected then. So don't be deceived. Every good gift. What about the bad gifts? They didn't come from God. Yeah, but Job said, shall we not receive good from God or evil? No, the devil brought the evil. Now God allowed it, but God didn't send it. And God didn't send anything evil. Now, can he use it today? Yeah, he can use it today. He could spank me with it. Remember in Hebrews chapter 12, all chastening. For the moment, doesn't seem to be joyous, but grievous, but afterward. So another reason why God cursed the earth is so he could chasten us. So that we could reap what we sow. So that if we sow to the flesh, we're going to reap corruption. All of that. So every good gift, every perfect giving is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Now, he's making a very interesting point here. When you get up in the morning and the sun's just coming up over the horizon, lots of shadows, lots of areas where it's dark. And then as the sun gradually comes up and it reaches its zenith, then suddenly there's no shadows. Then as it begins to set, there's shadows again because there's turning. And things change their perspective. You go out in the morning, things look a little different than they do in the evening because of these shadows. So what does God say? What does he say here? The good and perfect gifts continually pour forth from God with no variation and no shadow of turning. Now, that's not how my life works. Today I'm in the sunshine. Tomorrow I might be in the darkness. Or I might be dead. Or I might be terminally ill. Or I might be receiving the phone call, one of my children has just died, or one of my grandchildren has just died. There's a big variation that didn't come from God. There is no variation coming down from God. And so when we see a shadow, just understand, it didn't come from God. It's a result of your choice. We'll deal with this. This is a series, by the way. This is just the first in a series of lessons on human suffering. We just touched the hem of the garment. Time and chance. The race is not to the swift. The battle is not to the strong. Time and chance. Wait a minute. How could there be time and chance? God's opening. God's taking care of me. No. You were born into a sin-cursed world. And sometimes, not God's will, it's just time and chance. You picked the wrong parents to be born to. And you got the wrong genes. You say, well, boy, why didn't God redeem my body when I was baptized? Well, because he didn't want to. You'll get that later, but you don't get it now. Does that mean that I'm now going to see God differently? Not if I understand this verse. That shadow didn't come from him. The only thing that comes from him is good and perfect, good gifts, perfect giving. And they're coming down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variation nor shadow. And then he gives the proof. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth that we might become a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So we already have the redemption of the body. We already have the down payment. I'm sorry, the redemption of the spirit. We already have the down payment. God's promise. We also have the promise of the resurrection, where it's sown in dishonor, it's raised in glory, it's sown in weakness, it's raised in power, it is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. The redemption's coming. And it was of his own will. He could have left us in this. How did my mom used to put it? You made your own bed and you can lie in. God didn't say that. Matter of fact, when he told Adam and Eve, here's what you're going to get, here's what you're going to get. But when he told the serpent, what you're going to get, he said, he's going to come and he's going to bruise your head. He's going to destroy. As Jesus said, I've come to destroy the works of the devil. So we are the first fruits. And as the first fruits, we are living proof. God wanted to bless us all along. And we wouldn't let him because of our sin. And God's true intention in Revelation chapter 22, the curse is no more. It's all going to be removed. God never wanted this in the first place. He never created it in the first place. He didn't create death. Death, well, I don't know how to word it like that. Of course, he's the only one powerful to bring death into the world. But it was done as a result of our actions, not as a result of his desire. It was done as a consequence of our actions, not as a direct result of what he wanted to be here. So, let's go read it. No, we won't. We're just about out of time. So let's just kind of touch on it right now. He's going to wipe away every tear. Death's going to be no more. Won't be any mourning, no crying, no pain. The first things are passed away. Now, this is what Paul was talking about in Romans chapter 8. When he says, sufferings of this time are not worthy to be compared with the glory, for the whole creation has been subjected to vanity, and the whole creation is groaning and travailing until the new heavens and the new earth are created. So, one of the most healthy attitudes that you and I can develop to protect ourselves, because like I say, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But I know something's going to happen. We're all going to die. And some of us are going to outlive those that we love, and we're going to see them die. And some of us are going to witness terrible cataclysm. If we were living in North Carolina right now, we'd be wondering, what in the world? God, what are you doing? I'm your son. Why are you treating me like this? Well, read Romans 8. Read Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Healthy attitude number one, God made the creation very good. Suffering was impossible in the world God created, but the curse is a just penalty for our sin. The curse of sin is the reason for all suffering. We are to blame, not God. So don't look at God's mirror and reflect on him. Look at your own mirror and say to yourself, this is all my fault. This is our fault. We brought this on ourselves. So, again, this is the first in a series of lessons that we're going to be covering. Now, it'll be a couple of weeks because I'm going to be holding gospel meeting next week in Kentucky. So next Sunday, I won't be here, or the following Sunday. But when I come back, we're going to continue the study. I find it a very fascinating study. I'm not sure why. I've been here almost 6 years and I haven't preached it yet. But this is the first time I've preached this here. I try to preach it every few years because it's very, very healthy for us to be aware of these things, because we need to be vaccinated because terrible things are over the horizon. And so we need to be prepared for them. So having heard this lesson, I hope we've answered some very, very important questions that all of us have had, maybe some nagging doubts about why did God do this or why did God do that. You can't tell. It's so complicated. It's so infinitely complicated. Sometimes it's Satan. Sometimes it's time and chance. Sometimes it is God. Sometimes it's just, I was at the wrong place and the wrong time. I guess that's time and chance. But you never know. And if we've charged God foolishly, like Job, or if there's been a part of our heart in which we have doubted or worried or said to ourselves, how could I serve a God who could do that? Or how could this happen? Well, now you know. Not God at all. And so, if we don't get our spirit redeemed, our body will never be redeemed. And we will go from this sin-cursed body into the eternally sin-cursed body that will burn in the pits of this terrible place called hell. Or we can redeem our souls now and wait for the redemption of our body. That's our choice. And so as we sing the song this evening, if anyone here has to become a Christian by having believed the word, having believed Jesus is the Christ, having heard the gospel and accepting it, having repented of our sins and confessed our desire and interest that Jesus is the Christ, and been baptized. And if we haven't done that, our body is not yet, our soul is not yet redeemed. And of course, we can, even after our soul is redeemed, we can sell it again. And that's what repentance is having that redemption, continuing redemption, because the spirit has to be redeemed after every sin. The word redeemed just means bought back. And the word sin means I violated God's law and I've died again. So as we sing the song of encouragement this evening, if we can help you in any way, we invite you to come while we together stand and sing.